15% off a Tex-Mex bowl, if you shoot for the stars, or well, even if you miss, you'll land among the moon, or if you aim for the moon, you'll land among the stars.
The New Brunswick Archaeology Podcast, featuring your hosts, Gabe Reinick and Ken Holyoke.
Welcome back to the New Brunswick Archaeology Podcast in Manchester, New Hampshire. I'm Gabe Reinick, and I'm joined, as I am, just about every fortnight by Ken Holyoke, who's in Lethbridge, Alberta, back from the CCRA. How are you, Ken?
Back from the CCRA. Yes, I'm great. I was in Toronto for the weekend. I guess it wasn't last weekend. It was 2 weekends ago now.
That's right.
Was it? Yeah.
I don't know. There's been a lot of back and forth on the time space continuum here on the New Brunswick Archaeology Podcast.
Yeah, yeah. The TARDIS is starting to show some wear marks, I think,
it
on
is.
The outside.
Yeah. Yes. How was it?
That was great. It was a one-day conference, so there was a lot of material to cover. A really great turnout. So it was basically a full room the entire day. There were a couple of interesting moments. So there was a representative who will hear later today from Haudenosaunee Development Institute, and he works with the First Nation there. And they voiced some like legitimate concerns about Indigenous engagement in the cultural resource management industry. And so there were some interesting conversations that came out of that. But all told, I think the lineup was really great. So there were some very complimentary presentations from colleagues who work in similar organizations in the United States. So there was a presentation from a gentleman who does lobbying basically for ACRA, which is the American Cultural Resources Association.
Did he look a little bit like he hadn't slept in a while and was a little bit haggard?
Yeah. So unfortunately, I didn't get an interview with Andrew, which is a real bummer. But he and I spoke on the train into the city on Sunday.
I bet you could contact him on this app called Signal. I understand it's very popular.
Yeah. And get the launch codes at the same time. Yes,
right? Exactly.
So,
yes.
Yeah. Anyway, I had a great chat with Andrew actually on Sunday about some of what's going on in the United States, and I think actually he'd be a great guy to get on the podcast just to talk about with our colleagues south of the border about some of what's going on as it relates to the need for lobbying first of all, and how changes at the federal government level are kind of trickling down to changes in the day-to-day CRM practice. I think he's got an eye to the ground, but he was kind of also just giving an overview of some of the key pieces of what it means to lobby and some of the key messaging. So like basically speaking, you know, how do you speak to politicians, right? And how do you get their attention? How do you maintain that attention? And how do you maintain interest in what can be sometimes like esoteric topics, right? And so, you know, I don't think archaeology and heritage are always top of mind for people. And so his advice was basically CCRA should be really kind of tightly should have a really tight mission statement and should really be thinking when they go in to do these advocacy things about like a specific thing that they want to get that they want to achieve and work really hard on finding like a champion, basically somebody in government or within a regulatory office or something like that that can kind of take that stuff and move it forward on the other side.
That's great. And I'm going to ask for an even more detailed rundown in a minute, Ken. But while you were out there learning about esoterica and talking to this guy, did anyone give you a new name for this podcast?
No, they didn't, actually. So
that's hard to believe.
So we are still named the New Brunswick Archaeology Podcast, if you can believe it. Although there were lots of ideas shared that day, I didn't come across a new name. But
so you'd say that the priorities were a little bit out of whack at the CCRA.
This fortnight we're talking about CRM, right? And with CRM practitioners, and we're talking about the first meeting of the Canadian Cultural Resources Association. So actually we've got a special package lined up this week for the lucky listener that renames the New Brunswick Archaeology Podcast.
Oh, wow. And where would they send that new name?
They would send that to newbrunswickarchaeology@gmail.com. That's New Brunswick Archaeology, all one word. Archaeology spelled ARCHAEOLOGY. newbrunswickarchaeology@gmail.com.
And that's the same handle we use on Signal.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So we are We are in the Houthi PC chat.
In fact, Houthi and the Blowfish are the new sponsor for this this podcast.
So Gabe, from the makers of Whose Lime Is It Anyways? And that's right, I said lime. It's the game where you all get ticks embedded in your leg during field work, and you have to determine who needs the prophylactic dose of antibiotics. And the makers of the ever popular Oligopoly, where you get to choose your own adventure as either a Canadian retail grocer looking to fix bread prices and buy out the locals' farmers market, or a Canadian telecom securing your distribution network and buying up sports teams, or a Canadian news media corporation trying to get a fringy right-wing politician elected. In the most recent expansion, actually, called Patriotic Fervor, you can get really good at social media, slap Canadian flags on a bunch of products, and you can buy out a political party.
No kidding.
Yeah. So we're actually here to talk about the latest release from Alburn Jungenspiel.
I just want to jump in for a minute and say that it's not just political parties that can be bought out. Ken and I have recently not gotten a shirk again, and we are ready to be bought out. So just let us know.
Yeah, so exactly.
We'll slap flags on anything.
So the latest release from Alburn Jungenspiel, and this is a New Brunswick Archaeology podcast exclusive, CRM, the board game.
Okay.
That's right. We're beta testing this bad boy, and Gabe and I want you to be among the first to see some of the game mechanics in action. So, Gabe, I've actually brought a copy of it here today, and if you can just grab one of the player cards there.
Okay, I'm reaching in.
So the listener can't see this. What you do is you choose your role, which you'll be. So you could be a senior archaeologist, you could be a field tech, and looks like, Gabe, you got supervisor. That's excellent. Okay, great.
Oh, fantastic.
Now, can you choose your power modifier?
Okay. Grabbing my power modifier from the deck.
Excellent. Okay. Oh, shoot. Looks like you got promoted without adequate training.
Uh-oh.
Well, that's okay. Well, we'll see how this shakes out here. Okay, so I've drawn my card.
It's fine. I'm wearing a helmet.
It looks like I'm a senior archaeologist. Okay, and I have the semi-retired arriving on site in a Volvo modifier. And actually this one allows me to get a secondary modifier.
Okay.
Excellent. Oh, double charge out rate. I'm sure that won't affect the budget.
And you're in Ontario, I assume, for this one.
Could be. Yeah. So we're shuffling up and I've drawn, we're actually going to be in New Brunswick for our jurisdiction. It looks like, the next card we're working on a pipeline job. Very interesting. Okay, Gabe, can you roll the dice for a vehicle? Yep, six.
All right.
Okay, looks like you landed on biophysical truck. So that's a poorly maintained 2002 Ford F-150 with a full space cap, a strange whining noise, and squishy brakes.
Okay.
Doesn't look like we'll need them, though. This thing tops out at 100 kilometers an hour max, but is certainly something you should take into account if you happen to draw the Dagwood sandwich for your lunch.
Okay.
So we're skipping ahead a couple steps here, and we've got a junior crew. The project expenses task card is an oil and gas per diems. That's a good one. We're shovel testing for our task, and your permit holder is gone for the day. So actually, I'm in charge. But you've got all the gear you need. So let's roll the dice here and see where we're headed. Snake eyes. Looks like you're off to one of the least explored areas of the province, the forested region of Bantalore. That's right.
You thought
the digging test pits in a small salt marsh was hard. Wait until you discover where mosquitoes were created.
And is Bantalore an expansion pack, or is that standard with the game that the listener might win?
It's standard with the game. So the beauty of this game is that you choose your jurisdiction, and then there are a bunch of environments that you can be shoveled doing all sorts of tasks in, right? And so
So
it looks like I flipped a card and I got a call while I was in the field. So I'm just chewing up budget. So I actually won't be part of the gameplay here. But it looks like your test pits are going pretty smoothly despite the heat and bugs. And you got 5 victory points because of that. That's great.
No kidding. Okay.
Okay. And so this the game mechanics basically shift from during the day to post field. And it looks like the field day is now over. So we're switching over to the evening routine round of play. So can you flip the budget update action cards? Okay, shoot, I was afraid that might happen. Looks like I blew the budget on the phone and drove back to the city, so we're actually going to be staying at the Motor Inn with the noisy road crew tonight.
Okay.
That means that we're going to have reduced test pit efficiency the next day. Again, probably affects our budget, but we got a bonus because there's barbecue, and so that's money in our pocket. Probably victory points at the end of the day, because the amount of money you make is how you count. Goes into your victory points, and so
that's good. It's not just a half-smoked pack of great prime times in my pocket anymore.
It's one of those modifiers that I wish we'd gotten. So, if you can flip, what's the crew doing for the action card?
Okay. Yep.
Flipping another the action tough card one. Looks like they went into the local bar. Another knock on our test pit efficiency for the next day. So the final thing we're going to do on this turn is set up the next field day. And are there any modifiers? Looks like we've got irate landowner. Now, even with your promoted without adequate training supervisory role, you do have +5 abilities with the public. And so I'm guessing we're on our way to CRM success. And so the listener can now kind of see how an average day in the CRM, the board game works. And so now, if that riveting playthrough didn't entice you enough, this package not only gets you first through the gate access to what Board Game Magazine has called unnervingly real, not for the person who likes one task at a time, and stressful, but I think mostly fun in hindsight. Your co-hosts, New Brunswick Archaeology Podcast, will also bring their own experience, expertise, and most importantly, enough growlers of beer and flaming hot Doritos to get through the field season while we play CRM the Board Game, if you, lucky listener, can rename the New Brunswick Archaeology Podcast.
Wow, what a prize. And where would they send that new name, Ken?
They would be sending that to newbrunswickarchaeology@gmail.com. That's New Brunswick Archaeology, all one word. Archaeology spelled ARCHAEOLOGY. newbrunswickarchaeology@gmail.com.
All right. And is there anything in that mailbox? Perhaps a nice email from the waitress you met at the Chili's, the new Chili's you tried out in the airport in Calgary?
Oh, yeah, that's right. We didn't. Did we talk about that?
We have not yet, I don't think.
Okay.
No, we did. We talked about it while you were there. There's going to be a discussion with us.
Oh,
that's going
okay,
to include
yeah, that's
you
right. Okay.
At the airport Chili's. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So
time is
so
complicated.
Yeah, is it ever? Okay. So looks like we actually do have at least one real email. Two actually. So opening up the mailbag here, we've got a couple what look to be real emails. We've got one that's called Educational YouTube Channels from Joseph, and it says, "Aloha everyone at New Brunswick Archaeology Podcast. My name is Joseph and I'm an anthropologist working on starting a Hawaii-based nonprofit for leading educational tours, creating educational documentaries, and producing educational social media all about anthropology, from topics related to archaeology and forensics to world languages and cultures. As part of that effort, my nonprofit is launching a union of online educators to help work together to combat misinformation on social media, and we could use your help. Educational YouTube channels, Instagram pages, and TikTok profiles who join have the opportunity to network other..." Oh, okay. So
this doesn't seem like it's necessarily directed directly to us, Ken.
Yeah, I think this might be quasi-scammy, but it's from Anthro Tours International. Yeah,
the listener can't see this, but Ken is scanning the email to get a mention of how much money they'll be sending.
I think the response to Joseph is what kind of sponsorship dollars are we talking if we sign up for these tours?
Joseph is a funny name for a Nigerian prince, isn't it?
So we do have an email though from Rick. Great Sites episode. So this might be a suggestion. Hi guys.
Oh, excellent.
I hear you're taking requests for episodes on Great Sites. Seeing how they are going to be doing work on the Isthmus of Chignecto due to coastline erosion, maybe Fort Cumberland Beausejour would be a good topic. Or the Isthmus Dry Dock. Love the show. Thanks for taking the time to share what you do with us. Thanks, Rick. That's actually a great idea.
That is
Rick,
a great idea.
And I think that's something that we can probably reach out to our colleagues at Parks Canada. And I believe Sarah Belands has been involved in some work on the Chignecto Isthmus as well.
I think that's true, but we should try to do that. I've actually, I think we had actually discussed that as being one we should do, and we never followed up on it. So
I think there's a few of those things, Gabe.
Yeah, there could be the as. Well, we became committed to human environmental interactions on the program, and so
exactly,
yes,
yeah, exactly. That was the theme of this season, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. But thank you for the suggestion, Rick. We'll see what we can do, and drop us your address, and we'll send you some stickers.
Yes. So Rick, I think has gotten stickers before, but I bet he doesn't have a 50th anniversary sticker. So So listener, we love getting mail from you, either by email at newbrunswickarchaeology@gmail.com. You can send us a DM on Instagram at new_Brunswick_archaeology. And
Signal. We're on Signal.
And the HC Houthi PC chat or whatever it's called.
Yeah, exactly, yes.
That channel still open and still active right
yes,
now.
Yes, exactly. So Ken, we started to talk a little bit about the CCRA and that you thought it went pretty well. There were some to your mind, appropriate concerns by Indigenous communities to work through. But could you just sort of summarize a little bit, who are we going to hear from today?
Yeah, so the order of the interviews, the very short interviews today, actually are kind of mirror some of the what we talked about. So we there were a number of presentations, like I said, from groups that are in other locations like Accra and the
Fame. Is that the other one?
Pardon me?
Fame.
Fame, is that... Yeah. And so Kenneth Aitchison with Fame in the UK. And then there were groups, there were presenters from within the CRM industry. And then, of course, I presented a paper that was co-authored by Lindsay Amundson-Meyer and Matt Monroe. This is the subject of a paper that we have under peer review right now, looking at the CRM industry. And Chris Doerr, who's the incoming president of the SAA, also had a pre-recorded presentation just talking about the CRM industry and some of the stats that he has. He runs a business company called Heritage Business International that does some market dynamics stuff. He actually did a really interesting presentation for my CRM class this week on business archaeology. And so we're going to hear first from Marianne Paradis, who is one of the principals at Artifact Urbain. It's a CRM company in Quebec. Mm-hmm. Marianne was one of the key organizers of the conference and really did a ton of work. Artifact Urbain did a fantastic job setting up the AV and kind of and also very nice swag. They've got their swag game. They've got these excellent field notebooks that are, I don't know if they're right in the rain, but very high quality. Nice to have for taking notes throughout the conference.
At least right in a drizzle.
Right in a drizzle, exactly.
Yes.
Then I'll talk to Matt Monroe, who's one of my co-authors and colleagues. He's affiliated with University of Calgary, but he's a senior archaeologist with Stantec Consulting out of Calgary. Matt Beaudoin, who's one of the principals at TMHC in Ontario. Richard Grubb, who is a member, president of ACRA, I believe. Or
at least has been. I'm not sure.
Yeah, yeah. And he owns a company in the United States called Richard Grubb & Associates. Kenneth Aitchison, who is the head of Fame, and also has another affiliation that I didn't write down, so I don't have right in front of me, but we talk about it in the interview.
Great.
And then Aaron Dettler with Haudenosaunee, the Haudenosaunee Group, and Marissa Barris, who actually is now working in heritage capacity with the city of Hamilton in their planning department, and is one of, I believe now, two archaeologists that they have on staff in their planning department. So she has a very interesting perspective, kind of bridging between archaeology and heritage, and is a firm proponent of the ways that heritage sort of needs to be better integrated into planning within like municipalities, for example.
Great.
And then Dallas Toma, who was representing Wolastoqui Nation in New Brunswick. But Dallas was actually giving us a rundown on the audio tech that we had brought with us. So Dallas is a musician and was totally fascinated by our fancy microphone. So you'll hear some really bad audio probably from the interview that you and I do in the Chili's. Uh-huh. And then you'll probably hear some really good audio from when I brought out the new fancy microphone. And then we close things off with a short chat with Sarah Beanlands as everybody was kind of decompressing and just kind of talking shop for the evening at the hotel bar, which was a lot of fun.
That's fantastic. That sounds like a good time, Ken. And it sounds like it was an interesting meeting. And how were your flights? Did they get you to and from where you wanted to be?
Got me to and from. On the way there, I was only delayed by about an hour. On the way back, I was delayed by about three and a half hours.
This is a new best,
that, of the... You know, that was getting home the same day that I had intended to. Not really. I guess it was 2 a.m., but, you know, it was... the flight that I was intending to take was there. Although on the way there, we were delayed because they had to swap out the actual airplane. Mm-hmm. So it was one of the older planes that...
There's nothing like an airplane transplant to instill confidence in your journey.
Yes, exactly. Well, I mean, I would rather they replace it with one that's operating properly than maybe try to, you know, get one of those Airbuses to limp its way onto the runway.
Loose bolts, I hear, is the problem lately. Loose bolts. All right, Ken. Well, so, and we have no hit pieces today because it's basically an intrusive feature that we're doing here. We're looking forward to sharing these interviews with you. And we will be back returning to regular programming in a fortnight. And thanks for tuning in, listener.
Yes, thanks, listener, and we'll talk to you soon.
As our roving correspondent, I understand that you are in Calgary, but you're not in your usual Chili's.
Yeah, I said to Gabe I was a little bit crestfallen to find that as I rounded the corner in Gate C, the landscape looked a little bit different, and I discovered that the Gate C Chili's is no longer. It's now under repair. And as far as I can tell, the Gate B Chili's is also gone because all of Gate B seems to be boarded up.
So you're at Gate A Chili's.
I'm at the Gate A Chili's.
And does that mean you need to pour two? What kind of margarita are you drinking?
The Don Julio. It's the cup has gotten larger, actually. So this one
you're
is with
the Gate A margarita.
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. It definitely is reminiscent of a fishbowl at the social club circa 2004 to 2008.
Yes. Yeah. I thought so. And so you drove, I gather, to Calgary.
Yep. Yeah. There are no flights.
I wanted to get to
where I was going. Yes. Yes. That's the key. Yeah.
And where are you going, Ken?
I'm heading to Toronto. And so I am going to the inaugural meeting of the Canadian Cultural Resources Association. And so I will be doing some podcast hits while I'm there and trying out some new recording equipment. So if this microphone doesn't work at all, then I have a backup, actually.
And that's courtesy of the University of Lethbridge Library, right?
Yeah, yeah. So much like the equipment pool at University of New Brunswick, ULETH, instead of being in the new media department, it's actually just through the library, which works quite well.
Very good. And so, speaking of pools, it looks like you're drinking out of a pool a little bit there, too. So have you looked around? Is there anyone in Western Wear in the Chili's that looks like they're headed out to the CCRA?
No, I they'd be blending in fairly well. I mean, I also don't know how committed everybody would be to walk all the way to Gate A to get a Chili's feed. But
And what have you ordered to eat?
I haven't ordered yet, so I've got another hour or so before I leave. So I'll probably catch up on the rest of the emails here, and then grab a quesadilla bowl or something.
Something delicious in Tex-Mex.
Exactly. Yeah, got to have the bold flavors. Yeah,
you do.
I was going to be stuck at the crappy Italian restaurant right beside the Tim Hortons, because I don't think there's actually anything else, any other restaurant to eat at in the Seagate area.
So very bleak.
Yeah, there's a lot of construction actually going on at the Calgary airport since the last time I was here. So in the last couple months, they've started some major renovations. I know that there were whole areas of the airport that had been heavily damaged actually by a huge hailstorm in the fall.
No kidding.
Yeah, yeah. So there were a bunch of planes that got damaged, but the airport itself was damaged. So
interesting.
Yeah.
And so, Ken, based on how relaxed you look and the fact that you're drinking a margarita that the pilot can see as they land there in Calgary, I understand that your paper is finished at what is your new personal best for having it done ahead of time?
Yeah, I think I don't know if I've ever had a conference paper done 4 days in advance of the conference.
That's incredible. Yeah. And what is your paper?
So I am presenting on research with a group from University of Calgary and Stantec. So Lindsay Amundson-Meyer, who's at University of Calgary, Matthew Monroe, who's affiliated with University of Calgary, but is a project lead at Stantec Consulting out of Calgary. We did a labor market survey for CRM in Canada last year in 2024. And so one of the things we've done is process the data from that survey. We've got a paper under review at Advances in Archaeological Practice.
Excellent.
And so we are basically presenting the findings of that paper to a group that I think probably would receive it quite well, in part because what spurred the survey work was some of the conversations that were going on. And so Lindsay and Matt and I were all part of the discussion at the CAA meeting last year that kind of spurred the CCRA to start forming, basically.
Excellent. And can you tell us what some of the findings are from that paper before the peer reviewer gets their fingers on them and changes them?
So some of the interesting stuff is, I think that one of the challenges are that, so we think that the figures that we got from it kind of grossly underestimate the Canada-wide value of CRM, but mm-hmm. we had a really good response from companies in Alberta, and so we can say that at least in Alberta, the industry is probably in the tens of millions of dollars, like between about $20 and $30 million easily, and across Canada, we can probably extrapolate that that's like well over 50, probably upwards of $100 million a year in CRM work going on. There are hundreds of people.
The listener can't see this, but Ken is wearing a very nice suit right now.
there's several hundred people working in CRM. So stats can, it's really hard to tell. But based on the feedback that we had, we can assume probably somewhere between 400 and 700 people are full-time employees in CRM in a given year.
Ramp up in the summer to something like, I don't know, 3,000 or something like that.
So it's hard to tell, and it's hard to tell, and it's hard to how much. Like, we didn't really extrapolate out a whole lot of the numbers. Like, so what we're presenting is really kind of like, here's the first glance at what the industry looks mm-hmm. like across Canada. And I think the big thing is that there is a fairly coherent suite of challenges within industry, and so we kind of have it broken down in sort of four categories in the paper and for the presentation is sort of. These kind of key themes that came out of a lot of the qualitative data from the survey, and that's that there's this labor market data, but as well as this like labor shortage across Canada. There are challenges with working conditions, and so some of this is pay and benefits, some of this is work-life balance, but also some of the challenges that those are from the employee side. But what's really interesting is that on the employer side, we had a lot of discussion around they would like to pay employees more, but there's these challenges with basically with trying to pay more and this race to the bottom in terms of charge outs. And so there's mm-hmm. like trying to, in order to compensate employees more, they have to charge clients more. And as a result, we'll end up losing business. And so there's these real tensions that I think are kind of interesting things that will probably come out in a venue like the CCRA. And then the last theme that Lindsay and I are particularly interested in is the education and preparedness piece, where findings suggest that in general, employees feel like, and employers actually feel like people are more prepared for the CRM industry if they've taken an archaeology specific degree rather than an archaeology focus in an anthropology degree, which mm-hmm. is kind of interesting. But that,
of course, the folks at Calgary would be pushing that.
Well, so it's an interesting thing to read because it was really widespread and it was like stark enough that we could actually pick it out from mm-hmm. data that like and I think some of it is that there are more practical things that are being taught in sort of archaeology BSE or BA programs rather than and I think it's probably just that there's more practical field stuff mm-hmm. and so. So the next part of this project is basically to kind of drill down on some of these things and reach out to people who did the survey to try to get a little bit more information around things like the education piece. And, you know, it's really interesting because a lot of our findings mirror what was happening in the States. That there's a Altschul and Klein article that I like to reference from 2022 where they're forecasting what's happening in the U.S. CRM industry and that there's a massive shortage right now and that there's going to be an increasing shortage over time. Of people working in CRM and in particular permit holding level people. And it looks like the same thing's happening in Canada. And we're facing similar challenges where investment in post-secondary education is decreasing. And so the likelihood of like being able to expand graduate programs and training for students, you know, in the current climate is difficult, right?
And so, let alone funding world-class podcasts.
Exactly. So that's the kind of the high level. And then stay tuned for whatever comes out, shakes out after peer review.
Excellent. That sounds great. I'm looking forward to that. How long has that been with the fine folks at Advanced in Archaeological Practice?
I think it just got sent in early last week and officially sent out for review, I think 2 days ago. So.
Oh, excellent. Okay. So don't hold your breath literally, listener, but you can hold your breath figuratively.
Yeah, well, I mean, this episode will probably drop, I don't know, in a couple of weeks, right? So.
Oh, and AAP is fast, I think, in my experience.
You never know. The hit piece might be in a couple months, might be on the paper.
That's excellent. Okay, well, I'm glad to hear that. And so we can expect, as our roving correspondent for this weekend, that there's going to be just lots of material, I guess, coming in from the CCRA.
That is the goal. Yep. So hopefully people are ready to speak into a mic for a couple minutes.
Okay. Well, I guess I should let you go get your Tex-Mex bowl and your second margarita. don't do anything on the plane I wouldn't do. You know, even with that nice suit, remember that you're not the kind of celebrity that it will look good. You know, when you're the podcaster that gets pulled off the plane for waving around an empty margarita glass, demanding a third Courvoisier.
Exactly. Although I did get stopped at security because I had two microphones in my backpack, and I think they thought that might be anomalous.
Was it because you're wearing them? In addition to that fine suit, you've got the double holsters. It's very Western.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm tucking a microphone into each one.
Excellent. And don't forget to ask the Chili's the A terminal if they would like to sponsor. The New Brunswick Archaeology Podcast.
I should. I'll see if they'll put up a sticker here somewhere. It doesn't look like something they do, but you never know. Maybe corporate will be okay with
it. A sticker would be good. And don't lead with the offer that they can be a sponsor for 15% off a Tex-Mex bowl. But you know, if you shoot for the stars, or even if you miss, you'll land among the moon. Or if you aim for the moon, you'll land among the stars. I can't remember.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Ken. Well, fly safe, and we will talk soon.
All right, we're on day one, or I guess the only day, of the inaugural Canadian Cultural Resources Association. I'm here with one of its architects, Marianne Paradis, who is with Artifact Arbain. So, Marianne, you want to talk about the formation of the CCRA, what your role is here, and what Artifact Arbain does?
Yes, so at the last conference in Saskatoon with the archaeologists that are doing CRM practices, we talked about different issues that we have in the field and in our industry. The consensus was we need to have an association that will be across all provinces so we can help each other and really collaborate on different issues. And I think this is the first step of this collaboration with all archaeologists in different provinces, but also the First Nations. And we really want to just open the conversation and try to find solution. And after that, go see the government and talk about this with them to really try to help the industry to get better. Because there's a lot of issues that we face that we need to address and try to make better archaeology together.
Yeah, that's great. And so you're in the CRM industry in Quebec. And so what's the kind of work that you guys do on a day-to-day?
We mostly do work in Quebec City. So in the art of the French-Canadian archaeology. That's really our main archaeology that we do day-to-day.
Probably some really fascinating like historical archaeology too, like very early European stuff. And so do you do anything like in the old city, or is it like cut basically all just development all through city limits?
We do most of our work inside the old city. Yeah, so it's really old, like the first colonization, French colonization. We go across the province as well, but that's our main our main archaeology is inside the old city, yeah.
Merci beaucoup.
Thanks.
Here at the CCRA still, I'm presenting a paper this afternoon with a couple of colleagues at the University of Calgary and Matt Monroe, who's affiliated with the University of Calgary. He's a contract instructor there as well. And he is a discipline lead at Stantec?
Technically a senior archaeologist.
Senior archaeologist, there you go. So Matt, what's the work that you do? What's your background? And what are we talking about today?
So my background's, I just finished a PhD at the University of Calgary a little over a year ago. My background is kind of foot in both worlds. I do academic archaeology when I can, but you know, my bread and butter is absolutely cultural resource management, and I've worked in that field, goodness, almost 20 years now. I guess I'm in year 18, which is really shocking to me to think about that. I started pretty early in my undergraduate career. Started in Eastern Canada, and now I live in Alberta. I've lived in Alberta since 2012, and I've been working with Stantec kind of on and off, full-time and part-time ever since.
That's great. And so we're here today, both of us having careers in CRM and kind of merging that and overlapping into the academic world. And we're presenting a paper today on some of the research that we've been doing. So you want to kind of contextualize that? I think last time you and Lindsay were on the show, this was in its nascency, wasn't it?
No, it was in May. That was back in May, yeah, when we were kind of getting this thing off the ground. Yeah, it was just one of those situations where, you know, I'd been quite interested personally in CRM sort of data management and trying to understand sort of the industry as something from a business sort of financial perspective and in terms of like employment and whether or not there, frankly, my question was whether or not there was a future in CRM. And that was what I was quite interested in. And the three of us kind of met after that May meeting, and you know, we got the survey set up, and I think that's really great because a lot of other jurisdictions around the world who have pretty strong CRM environments, they do this already. They do this already, and it was really nice. Okay. So I was really interested in understanding sort of the industry. I know other jurisdictions do that, and there are surveys in the UK that I was reading and in the US, and it's just it's a great opportunity for us to come together and do something similar in Canada because I think we need it, and I think a lot of businesses in the industry of CRM will benefit from this data and having access to it to kind of help decisions going forward and understand sort of the makeup of our industry. It's really, really important, so I'm glad we're doing it.
Excellent. Thanks, Matt. All right, we're back on the NB Arc Pod with joined by Dr. Matthew Beaudoin, who is with TMHC, formerly Timmins Martel Heritage Consultants, but now you guys are just an acronym. Is that correct?
Yeah, no, we've officially gone to TMHC this year as Peter Timmins is retired and planning for the future when Holly is finally hanging up her spurs.
Very nice, very nice. And so, Matt, what's your background and what brings you to the CCRA inaugural meeting?
Well, right now I work as a principal and manager of archaeology assessments at TMHC in London, but I have a background doing a lot of critical research in archaeology, heritage, both in Labrador and Newfoundland, as well as throughout Ontario. I've been very active at this for a long time in various organizations, OAS, CAAs, and always trying to find a way to sort of rally and pull us all together as a group. Been a bit disillusioned over the past few years by the difficulty in trying to get some movement to a more CRM-focused organization. And I think this might be a good opportunity to help bridge that gap and go forward.
Yeah, so the listener will know that Matt Beaudoin and Josh Dent are the co-founders of the Insituated Heritage Program, where you guys were basically trying to aggregate get an industry profile basically through aggregating data from permitting across the country. And they'll remember that Trevor Dow and Gabe Reinick and I have been working on that from the New Brunswick perspective. And so we've coordinated with Matt from an APA and B perspective. And Matt was one of the voices in this roundtable last year, bringing up some of the concerns. And so from your perspective in Southern Ontario, what are some of the major pinch points basically in CRM today?
Yeah, I think one of the big issues I'm seeing right now and the difficulty I get over is trying to, again, open communication and bridge gaps. I'm seeing more and more siloing of archaeologists, companies, individuals, because we're all burnt out, we're tired, we're all fighting our own fight, not realizing that we're all having a similar issue as our neighbor across the street. I know since Insituated, I know several of us, myself included, have been trying to do more aggregate data on the Ontario scene, looking at permits or licensing and review letters and things like that to sort of help mobilize really against the province and trying to smooth out some of the processes there, which is exhausting on top of everything else. But I think it's the only really way to sort of have proactive change and sort of try to take control of this. And I see like the CCRA is really being a way to sort of take that idea and spread it across Canada and find those spaces where we can, you know, help support each other, work together, share information.
Yeah, sort of a stronger together model.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Matt. I will continue to hear your stuff today, and thank you for being on the program.
No, I appreciate it. Anytime.
All right, we're back with the NB Archaeology Podcast at the inaugural meeting of the Canadian Cultural Resources Association, CCRA, and I am joined by Richard Grubb of Richard Grubb & Associates, CRM firm operating out of New Jersey.
very close to New Brunswick, New Jersey, the other New Brunswick. And so we've got a little bit of New Brunswick content right here. And so, Richard, we had you on the show last year at the CAAs. You and Sarah spoke about what the vision for the CCRA was, or what came out of the roundtable discussion. So can you tell us what ACRA is and what brings you here today?
Yeah, well, ACRA is the American Cultural Resources Association. That's the trade association for the CRM industry in the U.S. And I'm here today after about a year of going backwards and forwards with my members of the CAA, who are commercial archaeologists, to form their own association. So today is the meeting of the first meeting of the Canadian Cultural Resource Association, and we hope that it'll be very successful moving forward with the help and support of ACRA.
Yeah, and so you just did a short presentation basically on what ACRA does in the States. So could you give the listener sort of an overview of sort of what role ACRA plays and what you provide for your members?
Yeah, the main thing that we provide is, as you might expect, is a lobbying. We have a part-time firm involved in checking out what goes on in DC with all the laws and the changes in the laws and how that's going to affect the CRM industry. Apart from advocacy, we've come up with a lot more benefits recently. We have a mastermind program which helps small businesses. We have the partnership program, which, as you can see here today, benefits so many people in different countries too. We have insurance, liability insurance, health insurance. We have virtual conferences. We have webinars that we have with other organizations and other partners. So I think the more benefits we have, the better it's been for our membership. And we had a 50% increase since 2018. So I think we're doing something right.
That's excellent. Our next guest, I'm keeping him from eating his sandwich, but I'm joined today by Professor Kenneth Aitchison, who is with Headland Archaeology and FAME, and I can't remember the acronym, so I'm going to get you to tell the listener what the acronym is, and you're also an adjunct professor at University of Liverpool, is that correct?
Thank you, Ken. Well, first, FAME is the Federation of Archaeological Managers and Employers, and I am an honorary research professor at Liverpool.
Okay.
I believe the phrase honorary research means that I'm never asked to mark first-year essays.
You and me both. Kenneth, so today you presented to the CCRA meeting, and you did kind of a great history of essentially heritage resource management in the UK. And so what is your role in FAME? What does FAME do generally? And what's your involvement in heritage management in the UK generally?
Okay, well, FAME exists to support the businesses that work in providing commercial archaeology services, so CRM. FAME doesn't set rules for FAME members. FAME is just there as a network to let those businesses speak to each other. But then FAME advises them on making sure that they're not making non-archaeological mistakes. Let's say things like health and safety at work is regulated by law. We have taken a very much a leading role in making sure that FAME members know absolutely how to act best in terms of the health and safety of their staff and other people that they're working with. Also, FAME does a little bit of discussing, negotiating, lobbying with other interested bodies that have to do with commercial archaeology and its application. And so we ensure that we work very closely with the Association of Local Government Archaeology Officers. They're the ones that are setting the briefs for the work that needs to get done. Our members then are doing the work. I said earlier today it was 93% of all archaeological work in the UK. It's not. It's more like 97% of all archaeological work is done through this. And so we, FAME, make sure that our members are getting the best chance they have to work well within a free, fair, and hopefully growing competitive market.
Yeah, and the figures that you cited are actually kind of remarkably similar to what we see in North America in terms of the students going into, basically the placements of archaeologists in industry is the vast majority where people are going. You told an interesting anecdote about how there's actually a glut of archaeology programs in the UK, but that you're seeing the same issues in the UK as we see in North America, where there aren't as many training opportunities that are specifically tailored to careers in professional archaeology or in heritage management.
Yes, one could say that there's a glut of archaeology, university archaeology providers, archaeology departments. So a lot of good people are coming through with good degrees, but they might not choose to work in commercial archaeology, and so it is difficult to recruit. All of our members recognize the difficulties in recruiting staff. So the workaround there is that some of the bigger FAME members are running their own training programs, and they're running graduate training programs and non-graduate training programs. There is no difference in content, but it's just interesting to see whether providing this to different people is making a difference for who then gets a job in archaeology. And our experience is no difference at all, whether someone has a degree or not. But if they're a person who is keen to learn and active and engaged, they get the gist of how to work in archaeology really quite rapidly.
That's really interesting.
This is the route through the bottleneck of finding it difficult to recruit.
Yeah, and so you also told kind of an interesting anecdote. So in the UK, tuition would also be completely covered by the government. Is that right? The tuition fees are waived, or do you have heavily subsidized tuition?
At university?
Yeah.
No, that is fundamentally paid by the student or the student sponsors, okay, which we used to call parents. You might get a grant that supports living expenses. That's modest, more likely to get a loan.
So okay.
It is not being paid by the government. The government's giving you a cheap loan, but it's not paying them.
Okay, so that's actually closer to the Canadian system then. But one thing that was interesting about the CRM industry in the UK is that we'll talk about this afternoon, a very brief overview of Canadian CRM comes out of this post-war infrastructure drive, right? Whereas in the UK, it was motivated by during the war or immediate post-war infrastructure upgrades. And also interesting too that the government itself was basically the proponent for a lot of CRM work up until the late 1980s.
Yes, I mean, that's the way it rolled out in UK. As you say, the war was remarkably important for archaeology in a terrible, destructive way with the Blitz, the bombing raids on London and other British cities, then left a flat city with the opportunity to investigate what was beneath it. In due course, at that time, and for 30, 35 years, 40 years after, yeah, the government picked up the tab for archaeological investigation because it was seen as being something that was thus of benefit to all of society, so all of society had to pay for it. It wasn't until we had a prime minister called Mrs. Thatcher where this transformational view changed in that it was recognized that it's the developers who are building the hotel who are making the profit. They should pay for this work. And that was the great change in UK archaeology when developers were obliged to pay, not the state, not all of us out of our taxes. And the developers were, if they're going to pay, they're also allowed to choose who does the work. And so that led to a great growth in the number of companies doing this work, which has continued since 1990.
That's great. And so you've published quite a bit of information about the labor market, growth of the industry in the UK. Is there any kind of top line stuff that you would want to tell our listener about the industry and where it's going?
Archaeology industry in the UK is busy. It is busy. Everyone is busy. Everyone is finding it difficult to hire. Everyone is finding it difficult to grow their share of the market because it's a saturated market. The things that affect work are government policy. And that's especially when the government is being friendly towards development and new house building, new road building, or new railway building. These are the things that then, so government policy then drives construction and development. And it's the greater economy that then cascades straight down into the archaeological economy. Much as we might talk, we don't actually talk about the nature of the archaeology that's being excavated. It is about what is driving it economically. And as in so many things, it's the economy.
Excellent. So I forgot to do this morning with the first couple of interviews, but we, on the New Brunswick Archaeology podcast, we like to ask people about their food and drink suggestions. You're in Toronto. We're not really in Toronto. We're in Etobicoke right now, like out by the airport. Do you have plans to take in some of the food culture here in Toronto? Are you going to zip into the city to get some food? You had something that struck you as like delicious. Did you have a really good beer last night?
I had good Canadian beer last night, so now I'm staying at the airport hotel just now, but after tomorrow I'm going downtown. I'm staying downtown for a few days. I'm looking forward to engaging with the food culture in Toronto very much.
Excellent. Well, you're going to have all. Thank you so much, Kenneth, and great to meet you.
Thanks, Ken. It's my pleasure.
All right, we're wrapping up the CCRA inaugural meeting, and I am speaking to Aaron Dettler with the Haudenosaunee Development
Institute.
Okay, and so Aaron, what is your role? What's your background? What brings you to the CCRA?
I'm Haudenosaunee. I've been working with the Haudenosaunee Development Institute for about 20 years now. The Haudenosaunee Development Institute was formed by the Haudenosaunee Confederacy Chiefs Council, which is the traditional government of the Haudenosaunee people. The territory associated with the Haudenosaunee is most, if not all, of southern Ontario, at least. So we interact quite significantly with respect to attempting to regulate development within our traditional territories. The regulation that we seek to advance deals primarily with ecologically and economically sound foundational developments, which obviously involves the development and management of cultural resources, which necessarily implicates us in the work of archaeologists. Right now, we have something in the range of 80 to 100 archaeological monitors that we send out on pretty much all of the different sites that are proceeding within our treaty territory. And we use that to ensure that the archaeology that's being undertaken is consistent with Haudenosaunee values.
Okay, that's great. So, and is that is the monitoring program in Ontario, is that a legally mandated thing, or is that a treaty obligation? What is the what brings you guys to the field, or is it that you have the capacity and so you do go out?
It's legally mandated by the Haudenosaunee from the Haudenosaunee legal system, and essentially, going back to 2006. There was a failure on the part of the province of Ontario to appropriately regulate archaeology, and we found that there was a lot of bad archaeology out there, and that the bad archaeology led to an occupation of a site that went on for, it's still ongoing to this day. We took over some property that was being managed in an inappropriate manner, and we're still there to this day, 20 years later.
Thank you so much for talking today, and thank you for your perspective today.
Thanks very much. Pleasure.
And I am here with Marissa Barris, a co-board member of the Advocacy Committee with the Canadian Archaeological Association. Marissa, you have worn a few different hats. You currently now only have one hat, which is sort of exciting, I think, on your side. So could you tell us, so you used to work with ICOMOS, you're kind of wrapping up that work. So can you tell me what ICOMOS is, and can you tell me what your current position is?
Yes, ICOMOS is the International Council on Monuments and Sites. I worked for the National Committee for Canada. The International Council on Monuments and Sites is one of three organizations under a UNESCO World Heritage Convention that act as an advisory body to UNESCO. So there's three bodies, IUCN, ICOM, and ICOMOS. And then the way that they're organized is that the international organizations each have national committees, which then advise the international organization. So the Canadian National Committee advises the international level on issues of World Heritage going on in Canada.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you're also now, you kind of bridge the gap between archaeology and heritage more generally. And so where are you now? What is your new gig?
All right, now I work for the city of Hamilton, which is nice. I like the people there with their planning, in their cultural heritage planning. I don't even know what we're called, team, I guess, division, sector, team, that group. That's where I work now, mostly working on heritage designations. But I, up until 2 weeks ago, was the only archaeologist on staff, which was quite interesting because they do deal with a lot of archaeology. So having one archaeologist on staff was a boon, and now there's two of us. It's like world changing.
and so for the listener, why would having an archaeologist involved in a planning department, why would that just make sense?
Well, Ken, I'm sure you know that cultural resource management takes place as part of any sort of development that has to happen in Canada. So when you go to develop or when somebody wants to develop a particular piece of land, you have to make sure that there's no archaeology on that land. The people who regulate that are the planners in a municipality's planning department. They're the people who interpret municipal plans and decide whether or not a piece of land is viable to be developed. So if there's archaeological potential, they're the people who would use legislation to trigger that a developer has to get an archaeological assessment done. So if you don't have any archaeologists on staff, people don't necessarily know what archaeological potential is or how it should be triggered, especially when you have more complicated questions like you have a field that's been plowed by a farm. Some people might think, oh, well, there's no archaeological potential there. It's been disturbed. Well, no, if it's been plowed by a tractor, that doesn't mean that everything's been disturbed. It might mean that some stuff has been displaced, but the archaeological potential is still there. And even when we have kind of the way that guidelines exist in legislation don't fully reflect the complete archaeological potential that exists in a piece of land, like it emphasizes being within 200 meters of a historic trade route or a body of water. There's a lot of archaeology that isn't within 200 meters of a body of water or historic trade route.
Imagine that.
Yeah. So kind of understanding that is a really valuable asset for a municipality to have. And it's something that archaeology is a constant question that planners are constantly dealing with. And they really don't have the knowledge because they haven't networked with archaeologists.
But now they are.
I'm single-handedly spearheading. I'm walking into every planning office I can get my hands on with a bucket of dirt and saying, come dig in my sandbox.
That's very exciting. So we on the podcast, we usually also, I haven't been doing this consistently today, but we always ask for food and drink suggestions. And we're in Toronto and you're heading back to Hamilton, actually. And so for the listener, what's the go-to spot in Hamilton for food and drink?
I really like, there's a spot in Gore Park, which is right downtown Hamilton, called Red Church. And it's in this wonderfully preserved National Historic Site of a building called Victoria Hall.
Very cool. Archaeology and pubbing.
Yeah. It's all combined. And it's a great little, it's a cafe, but they also have wine. So you can kind of pick your poison. And then they have a wonderful selection of wraps and salads and baked goods. They stay open fairly late despite being a cafe because of the wine. So, you know.
Excellent. Well, thank you. And we'll let you get back to your dog.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Marissa.
Thanks, Kevin.
Okay, the crowd has mostly subsided here. They're packing up all the equipment and all the Perrier bottles. And I'm here with Dallas Toma, who's representing Wolastoqiyik Nation in New Brunswick. Dallas is also an undergraduate student at the University of New Brunswick and has worked with me on a number of different projects. Excellent archaeologist, but today he's going to give us, we'll talk about archaeology later, but right now you're going to give me a review of the Zoom F1 microphone that I'm using because you were remarking on it. And I knew nothing about it until about 2 days ago.
Well, you know, Kenny, I've recently had an interest in an on-site recording, and I have actually took a look into the Zoom genre of microphones. As far as I'm aware, the H1 is not quite as good as the H3, or F3. I apologize. The F1 is not as good as the F3, but you know, I give all the credit to Ken for really taking the initiative to try and build the podcast up and make the production a little bit more more rich, you know.
Yeah, we're all about the sonic journey here on the New Brunswick Archaeology Podcast, and you would know about the sonic journey. You're a musician, and so
from time to time,
and so so do you find your, so what would you be using a Zoom 3 for in your day to day?
Mainly for what we're doing right now, I think, Ken, for going out in the field and documenting you know, conversations and doing maybe some ethnographic research, maybe doing some indigenous engagement archaeology.
That's a great idea.
But you picked a good mic for it. If you can hear in the background, you can hear a bevy of people slowly sneaking away food to put into their refrigerators in their hotel rooms.
Exactly. So that's what I love about this is the ambient noise, right? And so we've got like the, you know, the clinking of flatware and buzzing conversations in the background. So
the emptying of bottles, the shaking of empty beer cans. Yeah.
And the shaking of people's hands this afternoon as they, you know.
The drying of people's palms.
All right. Thanks, Dal.
Yeah, no problem.
Okay, so I just had delicious tuna. I had seared tuna for supper. What was your dinner tonight, Sarah?
I went with the bacon cheeseburger.
Very nice.
It was very nice because earlier, I guess last night, I had the pepperoni pizza.
Okay. And how was it?
It was good. I actually only got one slice because, like, various other people, like Richard Grubb and Kenneth from Fame, various other people, also.
So Boreas was subsidizing people's suppers at the CCRA on top of all the organization work that you've done. So on top of your meal tonight, did you have a cocktail or a beverage just to unwind after a big day?
Yes, sir. Yeah. I don't even know what it was, what they were, but it was good. And you know what? This is the best part of the night, though. Just seeing everybody, all these CRM archaeologists from across the country, having fun, getting to know each other, sharing stories. It's a great thing to see.
It really is. So the listener, to put it in your mind, we've got about, I don't know, 12 to 15 people left here, kind of just talking shop.
Yeah.
And we have a representation from across Canada and internationally. So we've got archaeologists from BC, New Brunswick, Northern Ontario, Southern Ontario, United States, New Brunswick, Nova Scotia,
Edinburgh.
Yep. All kind of sitting at one table and just...
Cool. And very rare. I mean, you know, that this doesn't happen very often. So what I hope that at the very least that comes out of this is that we continue to carry on these conversations and support each other.
And I think that's a great way to leave things. Sarah, you did a fantastic job. To you and the organization committee, thanks so much for putting this on. And thank you for coming on again.
Yeah, thank you, Ken. Thank you for doing what you do.